Hi, Matti. Greetings, and let me introduce you to this wonderful gadget, this gizmo, which goes by the name of Chappie, which is brief for Charles Chaplin, of course, known by his film The Great Dictator, because this is a little dictation machinery. I can actually record it as I'm doing now, which makes it possible to send you the text file or the spoken text file as a document and talk to you while, you can hear from the sounds, I'm walking through the sunny city of Rheinfelden. Rheinfelden is just across the border from Rheinfelden, one on the Swiss side, which is where I'm at, and the other on the German side, and the Rhine between them has a flow down, and then you find Basel, and then if you go on further you find Rotterdam. So here I am, and thank you greatly for your acceptance of my invitation to think out some ideas together. And while I stroll through the beach of Rheinfelden, which in fact a series of concrete steps by the waterside, I would like to present you with some of the ideas that I'm working with, and also some of the questions for which I think you might have the answer, or at least an answer. Let me start with my impression of what it is you're going after in your research by simply postulating that this is quite exactly quite the same as what I'm doing in what I do. It is about understanding the universe from the bottom up, from first principles, and to try to formulate it in whatever language is available, or if needed, to create a language to be able to do so. You're addressing things like gravity, electromagnetism, consciousness, and all the stuff which I would group on the one denominator, which is that of universal coherence. You've realized that that involves patterns, and you already explained to me that for you the pi-adic numbers are in fact a way to do a kind of Fourier analysis by using the filtration method, like the Cauchy sweeping of a matrix, in which you can use a series approach to reduce the complexity to a more coherent simplicity. I studied all this stuff. At that time it was the Taylor series, and then it was the Fourier series, and then the fractals are part of that understanding, and there is much more going on in the way people have tried to find models to describe that. And that's also where I would like to take a detour from this line of exploration into presenting you with the way I'm looking at this all, and how I came to look at it in a different manner, and also why I'm looking at different kind of formulation that I can find, for which the texts and terminologies which are formulated at Cassis are probably closest in that line of understanding. And you were there at the formulation of consciousness. I also see that whatever we try to describe in the universe around us is in fact a description of our own functioning individually and collectively. So let me start with the foundations from which I approach this all. and at the same time show that for me it is all about understanding how the body cells originated out of the same pattern which created the universe. Also that the coherence of our body is in fact an electromagnetic field in which the electric circulation is in fact directly coupled to signal integration. Also that at that level there is no need to make a real distinction between the coherence of consciousness or the coherence of matter as it is put out and created and manifested by our living body cells, but also that at that level the kind of electricity that we are dealing with is a circulation of information in integration, thus literally information in formation, which is exactly the same as described by, for example, Hannes Alfvén in his plasma theory of star formation. So that is essentially what for me it all boils down to. That the universe as a whole is a process in which some cars come by here while I go towards a tunnel about one third of the journey towards the waterside, if you make it up here sometime, which is an easy jet flight to Basel and a pickup from the airport, then you'll be able to stroll along and see this. So at that fundamental level of description, it is the photon leaps which trigger the electron leaps within the atoms, and then those cause a shift in a time-space relationship, as a result of which atoms, which are a concentric resonant vibration, can extend and form a concatenated vibration, as you can hear from the echoes I am now going through the little viaduct of the railway line, and I'm back out of it, as you can hear from the change of the echo. So the vibrations of the atoms, when they are extended along a spatial displacement, they create what we would call the manifestation of molecules. And so, from the photon leaps to the electron leaps, then the transition from atoms to molecules ties in with the valency electrons, which are basically oscillating electrons between atoms. And then they can again lead to bound electrons which tie the atoms into a metallic grid. Evidently what we see at that level is exactly the same as the transition from an inverse, a scalar, to a vector, to a matrix, to a vortex. And it is at that level that I hope that you might have some descriptions which can bring it all together, because ultimately for what I see, the dynamic of the photons, the jumping electrons, the valency electrons and the bound electrons are all about the transition from a straight line for the photon to a circle for the electron, to a double loop for the proton, to a triple loop for the neutron. That means that the architecture of atomic systems are in fact based on a change of geometry from a line to a circle to a lemniscate to a triskele, which is a triple vibration, but that underlying all that, we are only dealing with the transition between those geometric patterns. And that is why, in my mind, it all boils down to the fundamentals of logic. The other side of the logic, and that's what Uri Fiedelmann described, you might have met him at Cassis. I translate his findings in the stenography of the mind as every description of the reality of physics is a formulation of the psychology of the functioning of our mind. In other words, equations are like the script or the score for the music, for the dance of our mind. So it is at that level that I see that everything can be brought together in very simple and compact descriptions, but at the same time something else is needed, because we need to have a formulation in which the logic of these dimensional changes of the geometries of the straight line to the circle to the lemniscate to the triskel must be totally integrated with the formulation of physics. And for that reason, I created, as you can hear, we are already in a park where the birds are singing. I changed my formulation and came down to an understanding which I called referon analysis. Referon analysis being the understanding that we create models of formulation, but every model that we use is also tied in with the system of logic, which is represented by a reference system. But that also means that any transition from one reference system to another can be reduced to a transition from one system of logic to another. So rather than stating that we are dealing with different reference systems, we can say that we are dealing with different forms of logic, and that, of course, we operate the logic in our mind. So when we are formulating physics, so to say, or when we are doing mathematics and shuffling around equations on paper, we are mainly looking in the mirror of the sheet of paper or of the laboratory apparatus of what in fact we are doing in our mind. So my interest in showing how all of this happens in our mind, because once we have that sorted out in a mathematical physical formulation just as you do, then we also have the fundamental formulation, or say equation, for health and healing. Let me come back to this principle of the referon analysis, because at that level I realized that the systems of reference, as you can hear, I'm on a gravel path now, the system of reference ties in with the way that we in our mind identify with the world around us. That, by the way, I'm going under a building here, is the essence of the whole idea that I work with. That in fact we are working with constructs in our mind, and that the mathematics that we create and the logics that we use are in fact the knives and forks by which we operate the constructs of our understanding. So that anything that we think or choose to believe is in fact a construct which we have created for ourselves, by ourselves, in ourselves. But we do that by changing the reference system, that is, by changing the identification which we have with our environment. And so for me, what is needed is to have a description which in mathematics and in physics makes explicit how our involvement matters, literally. Because by a change of involvement, we change the way we relate to our body. As a result, our body relates to our environment differently, and as a result, the environment will respond differently to our presence. And this is not just at the level of picking up a rock and putting it down somewhere else. Now, this is also at the level of the kind of physiology that we engage in by what we eat and excrete. It is also at the level of the psychology of the radio waves that we broadcast within ourselves and around ourselves. And thus it is also tied in with the holographic gestalt or the resonance field in which we participate in creation, and thus it is determined by our involvement in that integral dynamic process. This is where I'm now approaching the beach, which is a set of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 steps, in fact an octave, thus connecting the path on which I am with the river below. Calm water, nice sun glaring over the surface, and yeah, nice to see it. There's pictures of this somewhere. So what I'm looking at and what I'm looking for is a formulation of that fundamental level of the logic of involvement. By our change of thought, we change the logic, we change the reference system, and we change our realization. I have formulated that in the papers that you can find at Cassis, and the paper on referent analysis essentially describes how we create reference systems. An elaboration of that is found in a paper on total system inversion, which shows that any change of logic, if it is done in a complete sense, will have to deal with the turning inside out of the overall system. And a series of papers which I presented at the conferences in Baden-Baden of George Lasker is dealing with the way the integral system in turning inside out must always maintain its integrity and integration. That means that all of the descriptions that we have for physics must be placed on the interface, because it is only in the interface that we can re-gauge the system and operate the symmetry or the symmetry break. And in fact, that is what a change of logic amounts to, that we can break or unbreak the symmetry, that is, that we can close or open the boundary of the system. And as you might know, that's precisely what the Chinese were describing in their formulation of the I Ching, that in the transition of the boundary, you will get closure or non-closure, but at the level of I Ching that cannot be described. And so in the I Ching you will find that there is a formulation of the characters of the trigrams, which are the one side of the boundary, the middle of the boundary, and the other side of the boundary. Here you hear the train coming by on the other side. And so these trigrams are in fact describing the openness or the closure of the system interface. And if you would have a closed system, such as a cell, it would be connected to the environment by a boundary in a double sense. That's where the hexagrams come in. And so in the hexagrams, you find that there is a hexagram called before completion, and there is a hexagram which is called after completion. But there is no hexagram about completion, because at the moment that there is completion, the hexagram system falls away, the trigram system falls away, and then you actually see that the trigrams are based on a fourth element which unifies them all. So that is where you then actually see the freedom of choice in the system. That's where you're actually dealing with the freedom of choice which is the dimensional operator in itself. And for that, I'm still trying to find a mathematical formulation. As you can find on the Science of Life website, there is a 4x4x4x4 vector image, which is represented in schematic form, in which you find that there is four components of the vector of space, there's four components of the vector of time, there's four components of the vector of energy, and there's four components of the vector of consciousness. And you will have found the equivalent through what you are doing. So the four components of the vector of space are, so to say, length, width, and height, but those become meaningful only by having a dimensional integration in the zero point. And at the backbone of all that I'm describing and thinking is the dimensional analysis of Henri Langhaar. So from the perspective of dimensional analysis, we are always dealing with the foundations of how we switch between those dimensions. And so at that level, we need to have a place where we can actually transit from the components of space to the other dimensional patterns, which are those of time, energy, and coherence, or consciousness. And so for the space dimension, it happens in the zero point. So the normal picture of the axis, or the reference system of space, is that of three axes which are meeting at the center point. And the algebraic equivalent of that is the zero point, so x0, and then x1, x2, and x3 as the primordial axis in that reference system. The spatial reference system is meaningless if it is not connected to the dimension of time. And at that level, we see the relationship between the structure of the atoms that I've described it before and the dimensional system which I'm describing now, because there I was talking about the straight line of the photon, the circle of the electron, the double circle of the proton, and the triple circle, or the inside-out turning sphere of the neutron. And here we have the same, that the x vector, the spatial vectors, are in that sense linear, or momentarily linear, or perceived as linear, while the time vector is based on cycles, also known as the complex number system. So in the complex number, there is a cycle, which means that you know the orbit of circulation, even though you don't have to specify the position of anything in circulation. Because in the time domain, it depends on your timing if you can freeze or unfreeze the dynamic on that circle. Compared to the model of the atom, then this would be at the electronic level, or the electron level. And as you will also appreciate, there is a direct relationship between classical relativistic quantum and field theory, juxtaposed to the photon, the leaping photon, the leaping electron, the valence electron, and the bound electron. But we are specifically dealing with the way that there's transitions between them. So when you look at the time level, everything is described at a level in the form of time cycles or circles. But then these circles can expand and contract. In fact, they can go ellipsoid. They can even open up and go skew as a spiral. So all of the rotational forms are part of that time system, because it's also the timing system. And part of that system of time is the concept of timing, which is how cycles link up, which then brings us to the third level, which is that of energy, which I'll come back to in a moment. But before going there, I'd like to just point out that when you look in the dimension of time, the axis by which time is described is different than the axial system as is used in the description of space. It is not a point with three orthogonal axes coming out of that, but it is one line which then bifurcates at its endpoint and going into two lines. And that's precisely what is implied in the description of Susie Froebel. But you can also imply that or infer that from the definition of a circle, because in a circle, evidently, just as you have the description of a line as the connection point between two points, and others have already pointed out that it can be as curved and as curled as you would like. But when you look in the time domain, you again see that there is a relation between two points, but in this case the connection is not between the one point and the other, but by the one point circling the other. And so you are also using two points in relationship to each other, but because of our involvement, there is always that moment by which what we do and what happens around us is interconnected. So we have to formulate that, and that's what happens in the description of the time fractal of Susie Froebel. One time splits, and in fact the best example that we have of this and for this is in the description of cellular division. One cell expands and then basically topologically folds on itself, turns inside out, and then goes from one loop to a double loop. And that is also where we can then see the relationship between the time domain and the energy domain, which is where I would like to take you next. At the moment that you have a division from one cell to two cells, you have also this change from one time cycle to two time cycles, which is that of relativity. But those two time cycles, they interact, so they can interfere with each other. And that interference pattern is basically the essence of quantum theory, or the theory of relativity. That at that level, you're not longer dealing with a one point and a displaced the second point from one point to the next point in a line, as is used in the space formulation, or from one point to the rotation of the next point in a time formulation. But in this case, we are dealing with two points interacting with two other points. So there's four points interacting with each other, and that's what we find in the formulation of the lemniscate. So at the moment that you have a lemniscate or two circles interacting, then basically you get down to the basis of the formulation of Einstein, which is also the formulation of Planck, by the way. That where Einstein was looking at one wave cycle connecting up to the next, Planck was looking at the way the previous wave cycle was connecting up to this next one after. So Einstein was looking from within the first wave and seeing how it would extend, while Planck was looking at the bridging point from the first to the second wave. So in that sense, it is the transition, or it's the same relationship between the Euler and the Lagrange formulation. And so Einstein was looking at the wave, while Planck was looking at the transition from one wave to the next, specifically from one orbital electron in the atom orbit to the next orbit in that same atom. So, with all this in mind, you can then see that the essence of their descriptions lies not in the one wave node or the next wave node, but but in the wave node, because the wave node for the one is actually the same as the wave node for the other. So, at that level, we can then reformulate the whole description from the wave to the wave node. And then immediately we can replace the whole concept of the particle by that of a wave node. So immediately we see that it is at the same time a wave and a particle, because that's what a wave node is. And then we can actually go into the deeper understanding of what a wave node is defined by. And that is precisely by the crossing or the uncrossing of the boundary, and that's the terminology of Spencer Brown, which is equivalent to the closure of the opening of the boundary of the system. So at the level of the energy, we're actually moving into the system boundary and operating the connection between one loop and another loop in the system boundary. So that is where we then see, and we can see that precisely within the body, how the we got music to go with it. How the system is always embedded within its context. So in having gone from a formulation of space to a formulation of time and timing, at the level of the energy, we see that we are actually opening or closing, or half opening, half closing, the interface of the boundary by which the relationship between the system and its environment is opened or closed, which is a symmetry break or a symmetry creation. It means that at the level of energy, we are then not dealing with anything which is probabilistic or stochastic or whatever, but we need to have a double formulation. And that's precisely what I see in the work of Walter Schemp, when he describes that there is a need to link the Heisenberg uncertainty calculation with its complement. And as he wrote to me, he has now been able to do that also at the level of time, as a result of which he was able to get the past and the future separated in his equations, and thus able to see how the two of them relate. And that, of course, is precisely what you would find at the moment that you see that the system interface is the connection of the internal cycles and the external cycles. And I've referred to that in the work of Gerard Hanapi, internal system cycles and external system cycles and their connections. And then out of that, you see that energy is actually the opening and closing of the system interface. So you're no longer defining the system or the environment, but in fact you need to calculate both or describe both. So you need a kind of description which actually able to do that. And that is not what you can do with statistics. With statistics you can say that yes, there is a boundary condition on the one side and yes, there is a boundary condition on the other side. Or if it is a more complex boundary, then you can define as many possible boundary conditions on each side of every boundary that connects in that event, that locaton, that instanton. But that's just as redundant as saying that a die will have six sides and whatever happens, it will always land on one of these sides unless it is crushed or something else happens. It lands in the mud with one of the points down. So, in defining the outcomes of the interfaces in the context, you also need to define the conditions within that context, which means that you need to redefine the conditions at the level of the change of the context. And that's something which I worked out long ago and called variational analysis, and that if you have a solid state system, a steady state system, then it will have a variational set attached to it, because it will have a boundary which is able to redefine itself. But that boundary will also be able to not just redefine the system, but also the boundary itself. So you have the variation of the variation, which is basically what fuzzy set logic is about. But then I prefer to just see that it's the variation of the variation. And then when you go one level beyond that, you can see that you can apply the variation of the variation of the variation, which is basically where the system or the boundary or the definition would turn itself inside out. And actually that's where you encounter your own involvement. So that brings me to the fourth level of description of the whole level of dimensional analysis, that in going from space to time and timing, to energy and interfacing, you then need to define coherence or integrity by itself. And that is where you need to go to a totally different form of reference system, which is that of essentially the hologram. And maybe it's easier if I describe that or redefine that in terms of the way that we can experience that within our body. As you might know, we have sensations come into our body from any point of contact, which is any sensory cell. But then that sensory cell responds to that change of state of the environment by a Dirac pulse. So there is a spontaneous jump, a direct change of circumstances. People would also call that the scalar. And that then is relayed from the sensory cell into the neuron. But in the neuron, there is a reverberation setup, which is that what propagates as the depolarization or repolarization wave in the neuron. So at the moment that you look at that at the neuronal level, then you can see that you've gone from a point, basically a zero-dimensional situation, to a line, which is defined as having one dimension. And then you see that the change of the dimension also has a change of code of carrier of the information. I say the sensory cell is like one single drum beat, and then the neuronal impulse relay is that of a continuation, a ruffling of a prrr of the drum beat, which is of course the Fourier code, which was also detected by Valerie Hunt in her measurements of the physiology of the electrical part of the nervous system. Then when you go to the next level of signal relay, you find that in the plexus in the brain, all of the nervous systems cross and intercross, but at that level they do exactly the same as has been described by Erwin Land, who is also involved with the creation of the Polaroid. And in the formulation of the Polaroid, he was also looking into how the retina creates the visual image in our eye. And the text which he has on that is called the Retinex. And the Retinex is an excellent example of what happens at the moment that the nervous bundles cross and intercross, because at that level they are no longer working at in a modality of communication code of a Fourier signal, but they go to the format of a Moiré array. So it is like a hum, which is an ongoing reverberation of the system within the system, for the system, by the system, to the system. And in the body you then see that you have gone from a point to a line to a plane, but in this plane you have this Moiré array, which is a interference pattern, which is exactly the same as what I described for the connecting of cycles and loops within the body. By the way, that's also the system which has been described by Bert Vervain as the dynamic for the physiology of the cells in a living body. So from there, from the plexus, the signals are then integrated into the brain. So what goes from the sensory cell to the neuron is the difference between the states of the one to the other. What goes from the neuron into the plexus is the difference between the states of one and the other. And what goes from the plexus to the brain is the difference from the one state to the other. But every time the computation is different, from a Dirac pulse to a Fourier code to a Moiré array to a Gabor hologram. So what I'm looking for is a description to have those four levels described as one integral system. For what I see, the texts of Peter Rolands get close to that, and I assume that the work of Jos van Koenigracht, a study friend of mine who recently died, is also that level, because he described that he could calculate the the vibrations of the atoms up to 6 or 9 decimals based on the Riemann zeta function, which is basically that of a Bessel pendulum of, in my case, that would be of the fourth order. So what I'm looking for is a relationship between a hologram, a Moiré array, a Fourier code, and a Dirac pulse in essentially a simple, single mathematical transformation between four dimensions. And it's like I described in the text of Cassis about black hole navigation, total system inversion, and dimensional decompression. There is a very specific and simple logic which is operated in the cells. As one cell unfolds in two, the two goes into four, and so on. And at the moment that the complexity builds up, the integrity is maintained because unity is always preserved. And unity can be preserved because the system computation is shifted from the particle to the relationship between them, to the interaction interfacing between them, to the integrity of the entire dynamic that they create. And for that I'm using the model of a soliton, that if you understand the model of the wave creating a wave train and around that the wave envelope, and of course if those are coupled then you have a soliton, then basically you have the same four-dimensional description yet again, but now at the level of the formulation of a wave system as wave coherent, as the coupling between the wave nodes. And so within the body there is a level of description where you can see that the entirety of the body operates as a hologram, that every interface within the body at every level operates like the Moiré array, and that every interface transition in itself operates like the Fourier code of the neurons, and then every cell in that system operates by the Dirac pulse. So there is a direct relationship, as you can also see in the transformation of the Dirac pulse via the Fourier transforms, that the Dirac pulse is infinity. So at the same time it is unity, and that's the basis of the Fourier count in the Fourier series, but at the same time it's an infinity pulse and thus connects to the hologram as a whole. And in the living body that is also what maintains the integrity of the whole body. And that's also where I see the connection to the work of Tom Bearden and John Bedini. They have found exactly the same as I did, and what has been called by Nikola Tesla as the radiant field. For me, it was the resonant field. So if you look at the Dirac ocean of the vibrating subatomic phase field, then there are possibilities to have a phase coherence, which we know of as energy. You can actually have phase cycles or phase loops, which we know as the time base. And you can actually have a standing wave in phase, which we know as space or a structural object. But for all of these descriptions, which we know, which universities teach, which are in the physical, the resonant standing wave mode of that phase field, there's also a transient modality, which of course is nicely described by system theory. And again, it is a relation between the Euler and the Lagrange formulation, the fixed reference and the moving reference, or in this case you can see it in the transvariable and the pervariable, and that what you measure through the interface or across the interface. But the link between the through and the across is basically the transition between a cross sign and an equality sign. So two lines that are parallel shifting to two lines that are crossing. But it's exactly what happens in the wave node. The wave nodes cross, which means that the wave node is defined and it exists in physical space, or they uncross, which means that they are no longer defined in physical space, they exist in phase space only. And that is what John Bedini and Nicola and Tom Bearden describe, that for their measurements of the over-unity systems, or the zero-point energy systems, they say it's not interesting to try to get mechanical movement out of the displacement of objects, because as science has shown in the transition from classical science to relativity to quantum theory to field theory, we are not dealing with matters, but we are in fact dealing with relativistic molecules, which are in fact probabilistic atoms, which are in fact unified subatomic phase fields. So we are not dealing with determinism of the physical state or the relativity of the time process cycles or the interactivity of the energy transformations, but we are always dealing with this integrity or integration of the underlying phase space. And so Tom Bearden describes that as you need to look at these subatomic vibrations, and in the models that are nowadays used here, to which I do not subscribe, you would have the movement of the quanta, and as Einstein reformulated that, a quantum is essentially a photon. It's just how you look at it, how you measure it. But John Bedini says we are measuring that in the wrong way, because we are using the wrong instruments, because we are using the wrong model. We actually have to go into what he calls the radiant energy, which is that of the underlying phase field, which Tom Bearden addresses as the photon leaps. For me, that's already too far out of the underlying system, because in the body we see that consciousness is a directly accessible underlying substrate which we interact with. And so John Bedini and Tom Bearden, they are looking at that level of the photon transition. So they are looking at the photon leaps and say, well, that is the fundamental energy of everything. If you have the photon leap, then you can get the electron leap. If you have the electron leap, then you can get the valence electron, which is the oscillation between two molecules of the electron, which is basically a spark gap system. And if you continue that, then you can create a bound electron system, which often, of course, only happens if you're able to capture more valence electrons into an interlocked phase cycle. So for them, it is the shift from of perspective from looking at the material, stop looking at the movement of objects, stop looking at the heat movement of the molecules, stop looking at the light or the electron jump movement of the atoms, and start looking at the photon leaps themselves. So this is where I need to go deeper. I say, well, what you see as the photons are just the ripples at the surface of the underlying Dirac ocean. So we need to know the integrity, the holographic formulation of that underlying Dirac ocean, because that is a four-dimensional frame. If you cut through it, you get a three-dimensional slice, which will basically be a localized hologram part. If you cut through that again, you get a plane. If you cut through that again, you get a line. If you cut through that again, you get a point. And these different cuts are the equivalent of the Dedekind cuts. The Dedekind cuts and the Green integral, they are connected. It's like the principle of differentiation and integration. But when you cut through these cycles, you're actually making a distinction in the Spencer Brown sense. So you're actually creating an interface, and you do that from consciousness. So we need to have a description from the hologram in which we can collapse the hologram, but for that we need to understand the anatomy of the hologram itself. And for that, of course, the best model is the anatomy of our body, because our body is actually a cell unfolding, and the flow form then creates the physiology, which then condenses into a coherent matrix, which is that of the regulatory system, which determines the interface and the immune system. But that is then the carrier of the consciousness, or the internal phase-space coherence. And so at all levels, it is always those four dimensions coming together. And in the description of reality, we need to see how these dimensions are interrelated, because that is also how the cells relate to the organs, relate to our body as a whole, and relate to humanity as a whole. And for what I see, nature is simple. The universe is simple. So there is only one principle, and that is the collapse or the non-collapse of a phase node or a wave node. But that wave node is not as it is depicted in the textbooks. One oscillation line with its counterpart in inverse, as the electric wave and the magnetic waves, which in that case are put at right angles, like two different pieces of paper intersecting. But it is more simple, so we need to have an understanding of all of these phenomena in four dimensions, and all of them being reduced from four to three to two to one dimensions. That means that we are able to cut through it, which in mathematics would be called differentiation, or we can relink them, extend them, which would be called mathematics the integration, as a result of which we see how the parts always relate to the whole. And then we can see that the dynamics of life is actually the navigation between those kind of interfaces, the kind of interfacings, in fact. So in going from a point to a line to a plane to a volume and back again, we are actually rotating the system inside out. But that also means that we need to have descriptions in four-dimensional notation for all of those levels. Not just the brain being a hologram, as Gabor described it, but the retina and every nervous plexus is a different perspective of that same brain by another plane of interface of intersection. And my assumption is that it would be a tetrahedron, so that all of the nervous plexus would be a different tetrahedral cut of the pre-Bram holographic brain. But then it also means that if we go back from the plexus to the nervous propagation, the neurons, then that is a Fourier code. But the Fourier code is also a frequency. But that means that the frequency must also be oriented in four dimensions. So that we cannot have a Fourier frequency in the way it is defined now. We must have a Fourier frequency related to a specific orientation in that tetrahedron, which I associate with the brain and the body as a whole. Because in the tetrahedron, of course, you have a point connecting line, connecting plane, connecting a volume. So you have point, line, plane, and volume defining the tetrahedron, but that, as Plato already described, and as Vanessa Hill unfolded together with Peter Rowland in the description of the molecules of life in their paper called Nature's Code, the tetrahedron is in fact a fundamental building block of the universe. So it's not just logical to expect that the Gabor point, that any point in the universe is four-dimensional and thus describable by a tetrahedron, but also it must be a dynamic linking a point, a line, a plane, and a volume, and that means it connects one, two, three, and four dimensions, and that is what usually called a vortex. So a tetrahedron and a vortex is exactly the same. That means that a Fourier code of a propagation of a signal in a neuron must be oriented in relationship to that tetrahedron. And that all of the neurons going into a plexus together form one plane of the tetrahedron. But as the Chinese description of the meridians describes, all of these neurons are also related to the other neurons. And evidently they have their branches going out and the branches going back. Have the feed forward and the feedback loop as described by Bert Vervain in his case for the physiology of the metabolomes between the cells and defining the circulation of the organs and the functioning of the organs. But in this case it all interconnects. So there must be a mathematics which has a direct relationship between the algebra and the geometry, exactly as Peter Rowlands and Vanessa Hill have described, but that in that level the geometry and the algebra, or the GeoGebra as I now call it, having found a website of that name, combining software to do that purpose, but this needs to be four dimensions. And that is what I see connects to your topological geodynamics. The topological part is, of course, the direct relationship between the logics of the chains of dimensions, which is called topologics or topology. And then the dynamics of that, the time cycle and the time loops and the physiological cycles in the body, had that system of cyclicity is of course the geometry, the geo part, and the dynamics part is where you actually do the switching in the interface. So the TGD, topological geodynamics, is basically the point, the line and the plane, or the cell, the organ and the body. And for me, they connect up to the fourth, which is that of consciousness or coherence, which also people call creation, or people would also call gravity or mass. That basically, that's all the same. That's the standing wave that results. So for me, it would be the topological geodynamics is about the switching of the interface, catalyzing a process which then redefines the interfacing of the system. But the fourth element of that is the underlying logic of coherence of the universe as a whole. And that's where I'm trying to understand what you've been finding. And this is where I walk back from the beach to where I came from. Because in what I see, you are looking at the same as I do, as I said at the start. And what I'm looking for is the understanding of how you were able to formulate and define that. At one level, you have described it all in the way of wave forms. You described that you were doing superstring theory before there was superstring theory. But as you and I have found, you cannot do that in the dimensional notation or the space notation as it is used at the moment. As Tom Bearden and John Bedini show, this system of electromagnetic actions actually fuels our body. And it is those phase coherences, the radiant field, which is actually the state of consciousness in the modes of meditation. And as they say, you must have a dipole, you must have a symmetry split in order to be able to operate an energy. So we need a description at that level. So something else than superstring theory. And when you see that all of reality, and thus all of matter, is made of wave nodes connecting up, forming solitons, yes or no, then you can also see that the way they link up is combined with processes, and that we see very explicitly in our body. So the system of description must have a time component in it, but also an evolution in it, a forward and backward evolution. And in fact, that whole time domain must be based on a deeper understanding that all the processes in time, which are circulations with a specific closure, time basis, thus the time loops, that dynamic is actually the result of a deeper level of shock wave of energy which has already established that circulation, that oscillation. And that's precisely what we see in the body. We see the reverberation of that oscillation in the communication between the cells. And in fact, Bert Vervain has done this wonderful work in which he shows that all of the diseases in the body are the result of incomplete cell communication. Normally the cells would put something out, going to another cell, and then directly or indirectly coming back again, giving a feed forward and a feedback closure. But at the moment that closure fails, then the phase starts to shift and the system starts to drift. It will need to redefine its system boundary. And that's also where you can see then that the time and timing of the cycles then goes into the timing of different cycles, and that it is at that level that you see the description of stability of the whole system. Which is also why the health of the body is not defined by the anatomy, because that's created by the physiology. But the physiology is only the resonant feed-forward, feedback loops. And as Bert Vervain showed, at the moment that they no longer link up properly, and they start to phase shift and phase drift, then the deeper level of system regulation starts to be activated or mobilized. And at that level, then, the system starts to redefine its boundary. And that is the essence of the regulatory system of the body. And that doesn't operate at the level of time. It does not operate in the anatomy, but it operates at the level of the energy. So, in the description, we can see in the body that there is this deeper level of the formulation, where we actually need to see that the process cycles in the body must be redefined from the internal and the external cycles being in balance to what happens on the interface itself, there where the regulatory system operates. And then we are no longer operating in the realm of time, but we are operating in the realm of energy, or control and coordination, communication. So that's where the loops connect and link or unlink. And that's why the formulation as wave nodes is so important, because we're no longer dealing with stable waves in the sense of Einstein and Planck, but we are dealing with dissolving waves, that the wave nodes start to collapse and unfold, and in fact that the crossing of the waves uncurls to an uncrossed wave, which by the way is exactly the formulation as used in astrology in the sign of Aquarius. So that the crossed wave is the opposite in Leo, which is also the sign of the hinge, the crossing point, the connecting point, the specification point for a rotation, and thus also the system closure of two connecting loops. But opposite of that, you have the unclosure, the unhitching, the unlinking of the process cycle, which is that of opening the system. precisely as astrology describes. So that is what happens at the third level. But then at that level, we need to describe and the internal cycle and the external cycle, plus the interface, plus the context. So you always need a four-dimensional calculation, and you always must relate the system to the whole, which is precisely what system theory offers. That you always have the object plus the relationship plus the transformation plus the integration, all four of them together. And evidently that happens at the electromagnetic level. We've gone from the material of the anatomy to the chemistry of the physiology, the molecules, now into the atoms and their electromagnetic communication. But evidently the atoms are part of an integral system, because every electron leap in the atom is connected to a photon leap between atoms. So we need to have a formulation which is double-sided at that level, but also a formulation which works for the closed system plus the open system, where symmetry and symmetry break are essentially part of the same story. And that is where you must have a time formulation of the kind of the Susi-Froebel time fractal vortex notation, that you need to have the time fractal splitting in order to be able to deal with the closed system and the open system, because both of them then need to be synchronized and integrated in that connection point, which is the point where the system boundary is set and specified, which is precisely where the regulatory system determines where the system interfaces positions, and as a result it is the place where the stability of the part in the whole is defined. But at that level there are two parts of the consideration. One of them is just the local system with a local definition, which is that what is called logic and described by physical science, and that is what classical electromagnetism deals with, the flow of the electromagnetic field as identified with, because in part associated in the physics. But here we are dealing with the radiant field, as they call it, or the resonant field, as I call it, which is the electromagnetic field not connected to the physical substrate. And as cosmology shows, the physical matter is the result of the interweaving of the electromagnetics to form the physics. So at this third level from the material up, or the second level from the metaphysical down, on this interface of the energy system, we are then dealing with the electromagnetic field, but we are not just dealing with the linking between the electric field and the magnetic field in the way that it is described in classical electromagnetic theory, of the one wave orthogonal to the other and the wave nodes always interlocking and interacting. Because as Bill Tiller said, the dynamics of what happens in that wave node is decisive for what happens in the whole wave. And specifically, the closer you get to that zero point, the higher the oscillation of the vibration, of the calibration, of the interaction between those orthonormal wave cycles. And thus, the more information you can position within that place of energy. So that's also where you see that in our body, information and energy can be equated and interchanged with each other. And that's also what John Bedini described and Tom Beeren described, that you need to look not only at the physical part of that electromagnetic field, but you must also be able to look at the electromagnetic field without that physical part, as a pure information field. And that, by the way, is also what you find in the body, because the meridians and the circulation of electricity in the neurons are, say, classical electric circuits. Here I'm back under that same bridge as I had on the way up, with the echo now going away again. So you have these circuits or circulations or cycles, which is also the time base of the physiology of the body. But as in any electromagnetic circuit, when you have a cycle, it is also a radio signal. But in classical theory, those two are connected, even though people often deny that. So in the formulation, there must be a direct one-to-one relationship between the radio waves generated in the body, which of course will be spheroidal, and the neuronal circuits, which are in fact planar. But then you can see that the circulation or the circle of the flow of electricity in the neurons, as described by Björn Nordenström, is directly connected to an equal and identical system of spheres, and that's what Wilhelm Reich calls the orgones, spheres which are resonant nodes of a radio signal. And at that level, you can see that that's the equivalent of an atom. So if you have the radio signal without the matter, then it is called an orgone. If you have it with the matter, it is called an atom. If you have it within the matter, it's called a radio system. And if you look at it by itself, it is a piece of information. So again, those four dimensions. And it must be possible to describe that, because it is always the same. So if you look at the electromagnetic level, then on the one hand you have these, say, these spheres, like an atomic concentric cloud, but interweaving with other atomic concentric clouds, creating the molecules of the thought forms of the radio wave signals in our body associated with these internal body circulations as described by Björn Nordenström. But we now have a direct basis to understand the electrodynamic compartment or complement of what is known as mind. So same as in a computer, you would have a circulation of electrons, which are essentially then a part of a program. Here you can see that these program parts can actually stand on their own as different wave forms, encapsulated, contained within the living body. But as Tom Bearden and John Bedini say, and Tesla points out, and I found at the very start of my exploration, next to this physical part, there's the metaphysical part. And that's where you have these circulations without them being defined. And that's where you have these thought forms without them being resonant. Compare it to the oceans and the jet streams within them. But then if you have a flow crisis or a temperature crisis, those jet streams faintly fall away. The Gulf streams in the water fall away, the jet streams in the air fall away, the plasma streams, the aurora borealis in the ionosphere falls away, and what you end up with is a system as if the rivers disappear from the landscape. So in having that fundamental understanding, you can then actually see that there's a transition from the defined state of the body as we know it to the less defined state of the body as we can experience that. And that evidently is called the transition between health and disease. So at the moment that this is understood, then you can also see that this same principle of health and disease not only applies to our living body, but also to the universe as a whole. And that we see that in greatest detail at the level of the electromagnetic transactions and interactions. And that, yes, we have the electric currents in the physicality of matter, and yes, we have the radio wave frequencies interacting or interlocked or hanging within the physical body, but we also have their inverse forms, and that's literally their inverse forms. So we have the electricity of the ambient field around us, and we have the radio waves of the ambient field around us. And so those two interact, and that's where the descriptions of the zero-point energy engines of John Bedini and Tom Bearden actually show that there is this underlying level of information computation in the body, which also means that healing of the body is in fact the restoration of the integrity of the information flow in the body and off the body at that level. So it is necessary to see that healing fundamentally is computation, a restoration of the integrity of the software within the body, which means that the picture of the world within us matches the image of the world around us. So that then brings us to the essence of that third level of interfacing, that yes, we have the localized electric and the magnetic, yes, we have the localized radio waves and signal waves, and these are all interchangeable with each other, but at the same time we are also dealing with our open form equivalent, which explains telepathy, precognition, and all the paranormal and psychic phenomena. But as John Bedini shows, you must get out of this system of energy losses, out of the system of being involved in the immediate environment, to see what's happening in the larger scale system. And that's exactly the same as seeing how the impulse from the sensory cell connects to the neuron, connects to the plexus, connects to the brain. If you have pain and one point in your finger from burning, then within the brain you can connect to all the other points of sensation as well, and thereby redefine that one point in relationship to the whole and restore the integrity from within. That's the essence of healing. So that brings me then to the nearly the end of my walk and my talk. There needs to be a dual description of the electromagnetic and signal information part at the the regulatory system level of the body, because once that is inverted, then we can have a detailed and specific formulation of consciousness and coherence, which is also then the formulation of universal creation, which is then also the formulation of our participation in creation, and thus our consciousness of our consciousness in creation. So maybe I can leave it at that for the moment and see how you can reflect on that and how you can see that, how that can be translated in the mathematical concepts that you've been creating for the purpose. Goodio. I know this was intense. Yes, lots of ideas coming together, but basically that's the essence of it all. And the question is simply how to describe it. Must be simple because it's four-dimensional and our body already does it.